Between the Barrels, where every rider has a story. Hey everyone, I'm your host, Madeline Green. I hope you all are doing amazing. Today I will be joined by one of my favorites, Jamie Hunt. He had a standout year in 2023 and it was so fun to watch his success. I feel like I learned so much through this interview and I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I did. Hey Jamie, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good. I've known you for a long time, but for those who don't know as much about you, kind of share how you got started in barrel racing.
Well, I actually got started when we were younger. We've always had horses, but I guess I was maybe 12 or 13. My sister actually started going to saddle clubs and stuff and kind of got into the barrel racing. And she had a horse that she was having trouble with, and I would kind of just get on and ride whatever back then, but I'd never barrel race, so they wanted me to ride that horse, and I got on it, and it done really good, and from then on, it just kind of started building and building, and I really got interested in the barrel racing, so that's really how it all started from the very beginning.
So you stole your sister's horse.
I did.
That's pretty funny. So kind of talk about where it went from there. Did you just start going and competing, and you were successful?
We started going more, and then we kind of got a couple more horses, and as I was getting maybe around 14 or 15, I was really getting serious in it, and then my dad purchased a couple of young horses, three-year-olds, to kind of try the fraternity deal a little bit, and actually hired a guy to stay and ride horses, and that kind of fell through. So then I think when I was 15, he kind of, what they had already started, he just kind of gave them to me, and we started going to some fraternities then, and we actually had a gray horse, Hannah Gray, that I actually ended up selling to your dad, kind of how me and him got hooked up. But I had some success with her, and I actually won a couple rounds at a couple of fraternities, and I was really green, but the problem was I was so green that I would always catch a barrel in one round or something to keep me from like winning a big fraternity, but we still done good. And then from that, my dad ended up talking to Mike, and kind of that's how I got hooked up there. So then I ended up moving there and staying for quite a while and working with your dad. And from then on, it just went. I stayed there for a pretty good while and earned all I could, and then stepped out on my own and been going as hard as I could ever since, other than a few things that life throws at you in the middle.
Right. How old were you when you came and stayed with my dad?
I turned 16 when I came and stayed with your dad.
Wow, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. 47 now, so it's quite a few years ago.
That's funny. So since he is my dad, I'm just kind of curious, what do you feel like was kind of most beneficial about the time that you spent with him?
I think a lot of it is just the time that you really have to put in the horses, and, you know, it's never going to be easy. You got to get out there and work at it, and you know, back then, his discipline was pretty strong, which was a good thing, you know what I mean? He made you do what you were supposed to, and he picked you apart every day, and I think that was probably one of the biggest keys to my success, is him picking me apart, you know, making me know you've got to do it this way, you've got to do it the right way, or it's never going to work. And it was easy for me, like I've always been easy, like watching and learning and trying to pick up things, but it pushed me a lot quicker than it probably would have if I wouldn't have had that influence. And he did put me on some pretty good horses, and I think that's the key to any success.
Right. So when you stayed there, did you just kind of ride for him, or did you bring your own horses? How did that go?
No, I actually had just a couple of my own horses that he would allow me to work on my own time, but the rest of it I just rode his horses. So, and then, I mean, it was riding a lot of young horses and things, but if there was one that I kind of got along with, he would always, you know, let me stick with it. And I had the one little horse, Flippo's Red Butt, actually won my first fraternity, and that was your dad's horse, and it was the first fraternity of the year, and I was lucky enough to get to ride him, which we didn't, none of us think he was going to be that great, but he stepped up and was.
That's funny. You talked about life kind of throwing you curveballs, so you did kind of take a little break. What got you back into training? Was it something you just missed, or did you always know you never really wanted to get out of it completely?
I never really wanted to get out of it. And the thing is, even from an early age, like in 99, 2000, and 2001, when I had those really, really great years and I had a really great group of horses. And I mean, just, I had a good team and we all put all the work in, and I mean, it worked really, really good. And then when I ended up going through a few things, divorce and stuff like that, and to be honest, at that time, I think then I was like maybe 5 or 6 years into all day and night. Like at that point, like we kept 25 horses in training, and I mean, it was, I had 3 people working under me, and it was all day, all night. So I think when it got to the point of where things went south a little bit with that, I think I was just so tired that I just wanted a break, just to breathe, you know, because we never stopped. I mean, there was a long time we took 2 trailers up and down the road. And, wow. I mean, that was years ago, you know. I can remember 1 year I rode 21 horses at Fort Smith. That's how many horses I got on every day and rode through the gate.
You know my God. I mean?
So, I mean, just going that hard. So when everything did happen, I just got out and I just wanted a break. And I've always, you know, I've always been around rodeo and stuff and loved roping and doing different things. So I just took a break, and for 4 years I just shot horses, and I took in like 8 or 10 rope horses. I had a rope pen at the house and kept cattle, and I had a couple buddies that roped really good, and that's really all they liked to do, and they just stayed there. And for a few years, that's all I done was shoe horses and go to ropings and just something different, and not overdoing it,
right,
you know. And but as time went on, then it kind of got to where it was starting to, I was wanting to go again. And then I had a couple, actually Rex Nelson sent me a horse, is how I really got back into it, to run at Oklahoma City. And I ended up getting it ready, taking it to Oklahoma City. It got back in the finals, and then it slowly started building. But I think the hardest thing was, is over time, like trying to get the right customers back and get the right horses, because back in 99, 2000, I had really great customers. And I mean, back then, some of the nicer colts that you could go through, and we went through so many till we found the, you know, the right ones. But you know, it took me a long time coming back to, you know, for one, to let everybody know that I'm 100% I'm back, you know what I mean?
Right.
You step out like that, nobody knows why, nobody understands, it doesn't look good for sure.
Exactly.
You know, so I started trying really hard to get some, you know, good clients and good customers. And you know, when you go through that, it was up and down, up and down, up and down. And it really came to the point where Ashley and I had gotten to a situation, I was shoeing a lot of horses and a lot of really good horses and making quite a bit of money doing that. And we were saving money, you know, trying to be really smart to build everything we wanted. And it just got to the point where I was like, you know, let's just buy a few horses of our own and kind of see what happens. And you know, then we don't have the headache of explaining all the time. If it doesn't work, it's on us. And we were fortunate with one of those horses was Juice, which was probably the cheapest one of the whole group.
Wow.
But you know, he ended up, you know, starting to do really outstanding. And then we had a couple other ones of our own that done good enough that we sold and made some decent money on. And it kind of built from there, and people started getting me a little bit better horses and some really good clients that I could trust and trusted me, and that's really all it took. And you know, that's about, I don't know, 4 years ago when it really started going, and now it's been wide open. And you know, we've got a great set of horses, great customers. I mean, for the next several years it looks really promising, as long as we keep putting in the work and everything keeps going the way it is. So
yeah, you talked about roping a little bit. So what about the barrel racing kind of kept you wanting to do that and not go into maybe roping?
The money.
All right.
I'm going to be honest. Like I do. I love to rope. Like I could, if I could, I'm not going to lie. Some days I could just get up in the morning and get on rope horses and rope and rope and rope. And I really, really love it. But the problem is, with the barrel racing, you know, I have studied it and studied it and studied it ever since I was a kid, you know, and throw so many different things into it, that with the roping, for as much as I roped, I feel like I, you know, I've done good and I'd make a little money and stuff, but it would be hard for me to get to the same level roping as I am barrel racing, just
right,
because of the time that I've had in it and, you know, what I've put in it. So it really just comes to that. I mean, you know, you're trying to make a living. I've got 2 kids, I've got a grandkid, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a lot of things you have to put it when it comes to business, whatever's the smartest, whatever's going to make them have the brightest future. And, you know, it just got to the point where I felt like I could do better with the horses. And I mean, I really do enjoy it. Like, there's no feeling like when you make a great horse and you go somewhere big and it comes out the gate winning around one of the biggest fraternities or one of the biggest shows. I mean, that really means something, and you know what it took to get to that point, to make that horse, that level of horse, to be able to compete like that. So
talk about maybe a few like specific skills that you feel are important to be successful in barrel racing.
Consistency, I think, is a main thing. I mean, of course, you know, when it comes to at the level we're at, you know, a professional trying to make a living, you definitely have to have the right kind of horses, you know, that are, you know, athletic enough, fast enough, mentally sound enough, physically sound enough. You know, I think that's the main ingredient. But then it's just putting the time in, the consistency, and, you know, to where you can build something that can last and, mm-hmm. and can go on and on and on.
When you're getting your horses prepared, and I guess yourself prepared too, for like a big show, is there anything that you do specifically for yourself mentally or physically, and for the horses mentally and physically?
I think for myself, I just kind of go with the same thing. Like, my mentality, and I don't know where I got it from, it really came natural, but at an early age, like, when I was 16 running at the Congress, or, you know, the things that were big to me back then, for some reason, I could always just channel the nervous energy and not let it get to me.
Wow.
And I don't know, you know, I know how hard that is for a lot of people, and I don't know how I ended up just being lucky enough, but I can, when I get ready to run, you know, I never think about it. I just think about what I have to do. So it kind of takes that out of the equation, where I don't have to really prepare a lot. To me, it's all preparing the horse.
And right.
I kind of set everything up. Like, I'm really big on a schedule, and I'm really big on like every little step to get to where I have to go make a run. So where, just say a lot of people would just go run every weekend, and they exercise their horses and, you know, do a little bit and try to go make a run. The way I look at it is, when I leave, we left Kinder a few weeks ago. I've got a couple of colts this year to me are a little bit greener and a little more behind than the ones I had last year. So, you know, I know I've got a month or so before we're going anywhere else, but I just kind of put it in my brain when I have to run them again. So I just step by step build up to go make that run. So I'll come back and every day, you know, exercise and sharpening things up, making sure everything feels good. And then the slow repetition on the pattern, you know, just all those things. But I just slowly build and build and build until when it's time to leave and put them on the trailer, I feel like I've got them to a point where I can go make a couple of runs. I always only think about going to make those couple of runs, and then I think about the next couple of runs. Like, I don't try to look far in advance. I just try to, what do I have to do to get those horses where physically and mentally they can go and go make two runs at a big fraternity? So I work on that to get to that point. Now, they might be the kind of horse that can take a lot of runs. They might be the kind of horse that I know that I'm going to go make them two runs, and after the second run, I'm going to have to come back home and I'm going to need 2 weeks, or I'm going to need a month. Like,
right.
I just figure those horses out, what I think they need, and I just keep trying to build to when I know I have to go make a run. And then as the year gets longer and they get more solid, it gets easier and easier. But I truly, like, I set a schedule and everything just like clockwork every day, down to the days they need off, the days they need road. Like, I'm really peculiar about that, to build to go make a run.
You don't hear that many people that do it so scheduled like that.
I'm that way. Like, I pick every little thing apart. And I mean, it's crazy because sometimes, you know, if you watch some of the, I like a horse really broke, and I like, you know, certain things I want every horse to do, but then there's a lot of things that I'm not as picky about as some other people would be. But what I am picky about is the repetition. Like, I can feel everything slow until I get to the point where they understand exactly where they have to be when I go fast.
So how do you handle setbacks and kind of disappointments?
I think you just, I mean, when it doesn't go right or something happens, to me, I just get back up the next day and I go back to work and I do the same exact thing. And it's just like, you know, it's like you say, disappointment. So disappointment to me is like last year, for example. I felt like I had a really outstanding colt last year, and he done really good, the Ever-Eddie colt.
Mm-hmm.
But even to this day, now that he has been sold and he's in other hands and I'm watching him do good somewhere else, it's still every few days it crosses my mind those three barrels I hit last year to cost him another 150, so it would have put him over the 300,000 mark. You know
Right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
They're the disappointments that I have, but at the same time, when the end of the year comes around and we're all profitable, all the horses are sound, all the horses are healthy, everything is moving forward, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
You know, as long as it's not going backwards or it's getting to where our program isn't working, it looks like it's falling and falling and falling, then I'm going to start panicking and figuring out something. But I feel like if you stay consistent, you put the work in every day and you pay attention, and which, like my program, I think, you know, I do a lot of the work and I feel like I do a good job, but I'm not going to lie, the biggest part of my program is Ashley and Nate keeping them horses sound. Like,
Right.
when you keep those horses so sound and feeling so good, it makes my training program so easy.
Yeah.
You know, even yesterday, Ashley was videoing colts and we were riding and stuff, and she's like, that horse looks a little funny. Not crippled, nothing major at all. You know what I mean? Just fine line stuff, but she's seen a little something, talked to the customer, and she's already ahead of it. You
Yeah.
know what I mean? So before they get to the point where they're getting a little sore and they're not wanting to turn or they're not wanting to use herself, you know, she has a good eye for that, and she watches a lot. Like, she pays, even if she's not out there with me riding, a lot of times she's sitting on the front porch looking up in the arena watching, and when I come back, she'll say, did you feel so-and-so? And I'll say, yeah, it did feel a little different. And she's like, we need to check that. But she's always so ahead of everything that I don't fight a horse that's not trying a lot. Does that
Right.
make sense? You know, so when I get on them, it's just easy every day. As long as I'm big on horses being really fit. You know, as long as we're keeping them on the walker, we're keeping them exercised, I'm putting all the slow work and sharpening up and everything into them. But it's so easy when they feel good. And I think that's probably the biggest part of my program that stays consistent, because that's the thing to me is, you know, it's one thing to get a horse to a point to go win a barrel race. You know, I mean, that's tricky to do that in itself. But to me, the people that I watch and I look up to, and I want to, and the same things I want to do, I want to get a horse to a point where I can go win a barrel race, but then it can consistently run at that level and not for a month, for a year, for 2 years, and just stay consistent. And, you know, it takes a lot of keeping them sound, keeping them fit, keeping them mentally balanced. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that they can go on and long term just consistently win and win and win. And I think that's the trickiest part of any program.
For sure. I feel like I struggle with this next question, but barrel racing is kind of, you know, it's a split second type of decision. How do you decide during your run what things to fix and what things to kind of just let go?
Well, it's funny you ask me that. And when I tell you this, you're going to laugh, but because I am getting older. And, you know, I tell people this a lot and they laugh at me and they're like, Jamie, we watch you run. Like, you can get by a lot of things. But in reality, this goes back to my training program. You know, when I build to go make a run. When I get to the show, I leave the alleyway, I throw them away. And, you know, yeah, every horse might have a little something that I have to watch, but I don't think a lot. I think about mainly leaving the alleyway, going to the point I want to be at the first barrel, and I do that on every horse. And if I get to that point, it's going to work, so I'm going to be ready for the next one. If it doesn't work, then I'm going to go back and just fix it next week because it's too late. Like, I'm not big on correcting in a run and trying to do things. Which goes back to the point I was laughing about. You know, I'm 47 now, and it was a time when I was in my 20s that I felt like a horse could cheat me, or a horse could pull on me, or a horse could do something, and I could react quick enough to get by it and not get in trouble. But it's funny now, a big part of my training program is I actually school my horses a little farther. The point that I take them to at a barrel where I want them to rate or slow down is actually farther than it used to be.
Wow.
And I school horses a lot rounder and a lot more forward than I used to. But the reason is because now if I'm going across the pen and I drop my outside rein too early, they're going to get to that point and they're going to stay free enough that I'm not going to get trouble, because I actually can't ride as far as I used to could. Like, I can't, if I get in trouble and needed to hold my outside rein steady or do anything, I can. If they drop too quick or get ahead of me, I'm not going to lie, I'm done.
Right.
Or if I lose a stirrup or any of those things happen in a run, like, I can't. Like, used to, I could get by, and I can't now. So I really do have to train those horses to do things a lot different now than I did 10 years ago, so that I don't get myself in trouble. Because truly, when I do, I'm done.
Right.
Like, when a horse cheats me, or a horse pulls on me, or a horse does makes a big mistake, it's, I'm not coming back. Like, I'm done right then.
Yeah. Even just in my 30s, I can tell a big difference. If I lose a stirrup, it's all I can do to just finish the run.
Oh, God. Well, it's funny because, you know, your whole career, there's things that you think about that you always do or prepare, you know, when you're getting ready to go in the gate and certain things. And last year, it was actually the week that we were at Angie's barrel race where I won the slot race. Mm-hmm. Well, I ended up winning 90-something thousand that weekend. I won the slot race, won second in the first go of the open deal on juice, and I won the fraternity on the KVS Hit You Back Cash Horse. But when it came down to the last day to win the finals, all I had to do was get around the barrels.
Right.
Just make a smooth run and get around the barrels. The horse that was ahead of me had a little trouble, and, you know, I was just kind of paying attention, and I'm just like, Jamie, just make a smart run, get around the barrels, you'll win this thing. But something happened to me that had never happened before and completely blew my whole plan out of the water. What it was, I got ready to go down the alleyway, and, I mean, anybody that's watched Juice, when, you know, when I get ready to go, his first ride, when he breaks, he leaves so hard. So mm-hmm. my thing is just kind of making sure I go with him. But I've never lost my stirrups leaving the alleyway.
Oh, God.
Never thought about it. You know? Yeah. So his first stride, he broke so hard, and it blew both of my stirrups out going to the first barrel. So if he gets to the first barrel, I'm hugging his neck, trying to hang on, about to fall off, and he turns the first barrel. I drag it over. I still don't have any stirrups when I get to the second barrel. My hands are everywhere. I'm just trying to hang on. I drag the second barrel over. And I finally get my outside stirrup going to the third barrel, so I get around it. You know, Ashley, everybody's just laughing.
Right.
But it's something I've never had that issue, and I never thought about. But since then, now, every time when I get ready to local circle on every horse at every single show, every time I go down the alleyway, I push my feet down and my toes down and my stirrups right before I let them go.
Right,
and
yeah.
And I think about it every single time now, you know.
It's that slight panic, like, oh, gosh, I'm about to fall off in front of all these people.
What you thinking? I mean, 30 years of running barrels, I never had it happen, so I never thought about it.
Right. I love
that. You know,
but
it only takes that one time that something like that happened, and that's added to my program now. Every time I get ready to take off in the alleyway, as soon as I get ready to take off, I push my toes down right when I go to leave so that I don't have that ever happen again.
Yeah, yeah. So thinking back all of the years that you've been in the barrel racing industry, is there one or two horses that kind of hold a special place in your life and kind of tell us your story together?
I've been truly, truly blessed to be able to have some special horses over the years. Like, it really started with the Flippos Redbud horse that your dad had that I won the first fraternity on, and mm-hmm. then we were lucky enough to end up with him, and my sister ended up buying him and keeping him for a long time, so I got to ride him for a lot of years, and he won a lot of things. He won a short round at the Congress, he won two go rounds at the World Show, won all kinds of stuff. So that was like my, you know, the Hannah Gray mare was a good mare, and she done me good, but I didn't have her long enough,
right?
You know what I mean? So, but when Felipe came along, like, he done so many outstanding things and broke arena records, and the list just goes on and on. So, of course, he was probably my first special horse. And then I had the Martha Smoothover mare that I rode for Michael Boone. And, you know, that mare, she was actually, it was funny because training fraternity horses this time of year, you know, people kind of get worried if they don't have any luck, you know, right at the first of the year. And I always say, just be patient. You know, if you feel like a horse has got talent, it's a long year.
Yeah.
And the Martha Smoothover was one of those horses. When she was a three-year-old, she run the fastest time in exhibition at like 8 shows before the year started. Felt like she was ready as a horse could get. She never won a check until March. And we went everywhere. Like, she was entered at the very first fraternity in December, and she went everywhere. And we never won a check till March. But she placed the first time that she got a check. The next time she won a round, and then after that, she won 9 go-arounds in a row at fraternities. And that was including Fort Smith, Speed Horse, some of the major fraternities. So,
oh, wow.
You know, in a training career with fraternity horses for at that level, you know, because, you know, it's getting to where it's really tough now. But even back then, there were some top horses and top trainers. So to have a fraternity coat, to just go win round after round, 9 of them in a row with those kind of fraternities, like, that was truly special. And it It'll never go away. You know what I mean? I don't know that I'll ever have another one that done the way she did. You know
Right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So I had her, and then I think probably the next one would be the Bella Foose horse that Cody rode as a fraternity horse, and then I ended up getting, and with that horse the same thing. We just kind of figured out a few things and started clicking, and he won the NBHA World, won the Derby at Oklahoma City, and won a lot of stuff. Like, he was a great, great horse. And then it's crazy. I'm sitting there thinking, I don't even know how I was blessed to have this many great
Right.
horses. But then in 2001, it was actually the only year that the BFA tried the 5 year olds, and I had the Bully Bullion horse, a lot of dollar. And I'm trying to remember how many. I think he won 6 fraternities that year,
Wow.
but he ended up winning that high money earning and high point horse for the BFA. He won the BFA that year, and he was a phenomenal horse. Like, it's the same thing, just showed up every time he needed to and really made me look really, really good. Like, he was a truly special horse. And then I don't know, after that, I think that was when things started slowing down a little bit, and then I didn't go, so when I came back, I would have to say that the biggest special horse, in which now is the best horse I've ever had, is, Juice, the horse that we have now. Like, you can never think, definitely in this business, you can have a little bit of luck, and a horse can definitely change your life. Like, Martha Smoothover winning 9 go rounds in a row, but one of those rounds happened to be the finals at Fort Smith, which was 105,000 in 1999. It changed my life for sure, but it's crazy that, you work all them years and think if you're ever going to have a moment like that again. You know what I mean? And then you have a horse come along like Juice that I gambled on. I'd hardly give anything for him. He was crippled,
Wow.
But we took our time and just done whatever we thought, because we thought there was something special about him. And now we're back to where we're at now, and he's rebuilding my whole farm and, made us so much money and truly has changed our life. Like, he is one, I'm not even sure where he's at. It's got to be close to 400,000 or so that he's
That's
won.
awesome.
But, for a horse that you own, you don't have to split the money. You don't have to, it's all yours. Like, it was truly life changing. And, he's coming 10 this year and still winning. I know I've never had one that special, and I don't know if I'll ever have another horse that is what he is. You know what I mean? So.
Right. That's awesome. I know we talked about my dad earlier kind of being an influence, but who are some other influences that you've had over the years?
I don't know. It's kind of tricky. Like, I watch a lot of people, and definitely, like, I don't know if you call it looking up, but I do study a lot of other trainers and the way they do things. It's kind of hard for me to call, because my whole career, honestly, after I left your dad, has been trial and error. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Just trying things. But I do watch a lot of trainers, and I see, some of the trainers that make it look easy or some of the things I like. Like, I watch Cassie run. She always makes it look really easy. The same thing, I think, that Hallie Hansen, when you watch her horses run, they're just, she don't use a lot of bridle. Everything, they always look level. They always look easy in a run,
Yeah.
Or Ashley Schaefer, the same thing. You watch those, like hers, all of those horses just look so easy. So I do. I watch those horses and watch those trainers and just kind of try to see what I can see, and of course, we all, as trainers at this level, we all talk to each other, and,
yeah.
About all kinds of different things. So, like, example, when we were at the Breeders' Challenge, and the first go-around, I won 2nd on the Pritzy Stitzy mare, the Eddie Stinson mare that I rode last year, but it was funny, because me and Brandon Cullins were in the back pen, and, like, that first barrel was tricky for me, and, like, when I exhibitioned, it didn't feel right. So, it was funny, we were just out there in the practice pen about 10 minutes before I had to go run, and me and him spent 7 or 8 minutes talking about the first barrel and the approach at the first barrel in there. Well, after me and him had that long talk, a 10-minute talk before I had to go run, but it kind of clicked in my head, because we kept talking and talking and talking until I kind of figured out what I needed to do. And she goes and smokes the first barrel, went 2nd in the round at a Breeders' Challenge.
Like, wow.
So it's just all of us, as trainers, we all talk. I can't even name all the, trainers that I call them all friends, but we all talk a lot. And, you know, I think the amateurs probably don't realize how much that we get from each other by talking or being somewhere and discussing something that's going on with the horse, or asking about a bridle, or, you know, or just saying, watch a horse and see what you see because I'm not feeling something. I don't think that they realize at our level how much we all really do help each other.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, a lot of times they just, you know, they look at us like we're professionals, so we got it figured out, and it's not that simple at all. Like, we're probably worried and it's working, you know, harder than they are trying to figure it out. But the thing is we know we can ask each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We all know we have each other when we're at a show, and it doesn't have to be a certain person. Sometimes it just depends on which show you're at, which trainer happens to be there.
Right.
You know, and you walk up and like, I'm not sure about this. What do you think? And then by the time you have that conversation, you're like, oh, okay. Because they were there and I had that conversation, it fixed that problem. I can move on. I'm going to have a good week now. We all have that. So it's, you know, it's really great that we can kind of all work together and figure all those things out and make it a little easier, because it's never easy because of the work that goes into it, but all the tools that we have and the caliber of horses that we work, the mental game to me is not that hard.
Do you, specifically in your program as far as training, are there certain steps that you take with every horse?
Yes, definitely. And I'm one of those that's peculiar. Like, I guess it's a little old school to the point of when I go to get on one at the gate, it starts from the day I get on them. And uh-huh. I go to walk off. If they don't stand still, that's a problem.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And it leads into, like in my training program, especially when they're young, I do a lot of, like, speed control where I'll go in the arena and I'll start walking, and I'll go into a jog, and I'll jog 10 steps and relax down to a walk and back into a jog and into a lope, and I don't like to have to really pull on a horse a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but I do like for them to feel my weight a lot in the saddle. So by doing all that speed control and they start feeling my weight, then it kind of takes away from me having to pull on them, so they're more relaxed, they're more happy, they stay quieter, they're not trying to run off. You know what I mean? That's like one of my biggest things that I do with every horse, especially if I get one that's a little, you know, a hotter type mm-hmm. of horse or a little faster moving kind of horse. I really like for a horse to wait on me, you know, and I like to get a horse to where I have to pedal it around to lope instead of pull it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to have to keep my feet in them all the time. And, you know, a lot of people over the years at watching, like, well, Jamie, I mean, it's a barrel horse. They need to go fast, but what I've figured out, you know, over the years of training is those horses that are really relaxed and really balanced actually run a lot harder than the ones that are tense.
Oh, 100%.
A horse can just tense up just a little bit and be holding that tense when they get ready to go down the alleyway, and you might lose 3 inches of stride just because they're tense. Well, 3 inches of stride over 20 strides can really kill you on the clock.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just things like that that I really think about. And then the other, probably the biggest thing that I really work on every day schooling horses, and it kind of goes back with them really waiting on me, is I love for a horse to move natural, like wherever they're the most comfortable. And over the years for me, what most horses are comfortable is their pole being pretty level with their withers, mm-hmm. you know. So I like for a horse to be bridled up some where they're soft, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I don't mind if their nose is out a little bit, as long as I'm still getting the same reaction, as long as their pole isn't elevated. Like, that's my pet peeve. Like, and then not that, you know, it's a lot of my horses, I'll go through the gate and they'll raise their head up, or I'm riding around, they'll raise their head up. But it's still something I still work on every day, because when I get to that perfect thing that feels really good, it's when they'll actually, when I'm out in the arena and I'm jogging and loping circles and doing different drills with them, that they can get to where I can do all of those drills and they keep their pole really level, and I can just, their backs up, their feet are together, and you can just tell they start moving so much more natural, and it starts feeling really, really easy for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, I want it always to be easy.
Yeah.
Like, I figure the easiest way I can make it on those horses, the easier it's going to get to get to my final goal, you know, and to make them like it. You know, you want to take a horse that you're going to start as a late 2-year-old and train it all year as a 3-year-old, and then try to run it all year as a 4-year-old, and you know, those few years go by, that's a lot of time to make them like their job.
Right.
You know, and I'm really big. I mean, anybody that knows me and knows our program, that we're really big on the horses being happy, and we let them be horses. We like for them to stay out a lot, you know, and just be a horse. And if they've got a big personality, we try to bring it out in them. We don't scold them for it. You know, we just want them to be happy and love what they're doing every day. I want to be able to ride a horse and get off of it and turn it out and walk back 5 minutes later and they come back to me and want to go do something else.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Know that they're really, really enjoying it.
I like that. I think it is important for them to be able to still be horses.
Well, I just think, you know, a lot of times I don't know if, you know, I think at a higher level, most people do know, but they don't understand, like when a horse goes and makes a phenomenal run, that horse knows they made a phenomenal run, but I want them to know that I know they did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't want them to just know, man, I just tried my guts out. I want them to know that I know they just tried their guts out, and they have no idea how much I appreciate it.
Yeah.
You know, it mean the world to me that you just went and done what you just did. Like, that was big. And so we do. We reward and reward them horses, because I want them to understand every time they try that hard how big and how great it is. And I think that's a big part of my program, too. We do that, so it gets those horses to, when they finally get to making those kind of runs, they want to do that.
Yeah.
They want to make that special run over and over, because they know how great they're going to be treated because of it, and how much we respect them doing that for us.
Right.
You know?
Do you have a go-to bit that you use?
I do kind of play around with whatever they like, but honestly, I've got one bit that J&C bit's made for me. It's the Hunt ring bit, and that bit, because I can like let the curb chain all the way out, and it's kind of like a O-ring, or I can tighten it up and it's a little bit more, you know, that's probably my go-to bit that I kind of ride on everything to figure out exactly what they're gonna like. Now I might put it on some of them 2 days and then like, well, okay, we need to go to this, you know.
Right.
But it's really easy the way that bit works to be able to kind of get a good feel and a good read. Like, I've always rode a lot in O-rings and D-rings and stuff over the years, but I've got to where I still do quite a bit, but I've got to where I'll kind of step up to like the Hunt O-ring and first, and then I might actually go back to riding in a D-ring and doing some of those things, or I actually might go to something a little more, you know. But it's a little bit better middle than where I used to. I thought I had to put a D-ring on everything to start with to get a base. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now I've figured out I can kind of learn a little bit more, because that bit has a few more functions, so it kind of covers a few more areas. So it kind of takes away a little bit of time anyway,
right.
You know?
You know, like we've talked about a few times, you've been in the industry for so long, you've definitely seen it change. What are your thoughts on the changes in, you know, with all the incentives and different things like that?
Oh, I mean, it's amazing what it has came to. I think the biggest problem I see myself now is I wish there was two of me, because there is so much to go to. But I mean, honestly, if a man wants to make a living and puts the time in and has the right kind of horses, it's on you to not make money, because there's so much money out there to be made with all the incentives and all the programs and all the shows. Like, there are so – I never would have thought that there was as much to go to that – I mean, in a year, you can go to half the shows and have a great, great year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost impossible to go to all of them to pay that good, where 15 years ago, there was 10 shows a year that you would go to that would even come close to paying, where there's something like that almost every other week now.
Exactly.
And a show every weekend that pays pretty good. It's changed so much. Like, I never would have thought. I mean, we're sitting down, it's funny, because Ashley's been, you know, going over to tax stuff and this, that, and the other, and you just keep getting tax forms,
mm-hmm.
and then they're from so many different places. Like, used to, it was just them few, because there was only those few big things. But now it's just crazy how many different shows we were able to go to this year that were like big money shows. Like,
yeah.
A lot of them. You know, I never would have thought it would have got to the point where it could be like it is. And especially, like, I mean, of course, I like the fraternities. The fraternities, you know, pay outstanding. And if you can have some luck, like, it can really put you ahead. But even the open shows now, if you have a super nice open horse, like, you can actually make a really, really good amount of money
right.
in a year just going to nothing but open shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's crazy. Some of the slot races they've added, and You know, it's unreal the money that's out there to be made. I honestly, if you'd asked me just 5 years ago, I wouldn't have thought that it would be where it is now.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Your name was kind of everywhere in the results this past year, but what do you feel like was your greatest accomplishment of 2023?
Oh, man. It was a good year. You know, it's crazy because I would want to say, you know, winning the slot race and winning the 90-something thousand in a weekend, being able to win the slot race, win the fraternity and do all that, you know, that was special. And for that horse, it was a really, really big deal. But to be honest, you know, winning Fort Smith in 99, you know, and then coming back this year, they added the five-year-old fraternity, and to be able to come back and win that on the Ever Eddie colt, that, you know, I've loved that colt since day one. And, I mean, he was phenomenal all year. And only a few mistakes he made, it wasn't him, I made them for him, you know. But
yeah,
to be able to come back and win that fraternity on that horse, like, that was probably, I'd say that's probably the most special this year.
What about your career as a whole?
I'd say winning Fort Smith, winning 105,000, and
yeah.
Yeah, which that week, you know, Martha won 105,000 herself, but I actually placed two other fraternity horses and a derby horse. And I won 135,000.
Dang.
You know, at that show in 1999, that was just,
that's saying a lot.
Yeah. So I don't know that, you know, as of right now, I've never beat that in a weekend. So I don't know if it ever happened again, you know, but it's got to be, you know, the biggest thing that happened to me in my career. And it did carve a lot from my career back then, because, you know, the next few years was some of my most successful years up until the last couple of years.
And then I kind of end with this question. What do you still hope to achieve, and what impact do you hope to kind of have on the barrel racing industry?
I just want to still just be competitive, you mm-hmm. know, and be able to, you know, I would love to, you know, at least go another 4 or 5 years and be competitive and be able to make a living, you know, at what we do, because I do love it. You know, I love getting up every day messing with the horses and doing what I do. Even, you know, I shod horses for a lot of years, and I still do now, but I've really, really cut it back to where I'm only doing a few, so I'm really getting to spend more time with the horses. So, of course, I hope that our program keeps working and we can, you know, successfully keep doing what we're doing to be able to enjoy it another 4 or 5 years.
So cool to hear about all the amazing horses that Jamie has had success on over the years. I feel like I also should implement some sort of scheduling into my life as well. Thank you so much for listening to Between the Barrels. Again, I'm your host, Madeline Green. Tune in next time.